Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
1, 2, 3. Turn it up.
Get ready for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome back to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville, 680 and 105.7. And we are happy to welcome in on the Pratt-Issel Celebrity Hotline the former head coach of the Batavia Bulldogs, Jim Roberts. Coach, how are you?
Good, Mike. How are you, sir?
Well, that's Dan. You don't...
Hey, Jim.
Now, you keep me in all of the Batavia gear all of the time, and I really appreciate it. But you sent Mike some items, and he'd like to personally thank you for that on the air.
Well, that's very kind, Dan.
Jim, I've got my pullover on. It's very nice, soft, and just perfect for this weather. I've got my T-shirt at the house getting ready to wear it. Dan's got his Batavia basketball T-shirt on, so I really appreciate that. It was very kind of you to send it, and I now will promote the Batavia Bulldogs.
For putting up with Dan for all these years, I was going to send you a red Louisville Adidas pullover with Batavia stuff on, but I couldn't do that to you because you and I go back a long way, believe it or not. I attended Dan in your camp in the summer of 1972 at Bellarmine, the Rupp Issel Pratt basketball camp.
Yep.
And if I recall right, Coach Rupp and Rick Bolas did most of the work, and you guys were the figurehead.
Well, you coached, so you understand the coaching's really important, and Coach Rupp and Rick Bolas are pretty good at it. So, were you a guard, forward, center? What position did you play?
I was lucky to be on the team, Mike. I played with two great players. We came 10 years after Dan and his group. Dan's group really put Batavia on the map. You're from Ohio, correct?
That's correct.
When Dan played at Batavia, the school was between 400 and 500 people. And at that time, in Illinois, there was only one class. And I know Kentucky still has one class. But both Dan's junior and senior year, Batavia was the last district team to be eliminated from the state tournament. In 1965, Pekin, I believe, won the state tournament. And in 66, Dan's senior year, Thornton, with a name you probably are familiar with. Remember Jim Ard played at Cincinnati?
Oh, sure.
Lamar Thomas played at Michigan State football and basketball. That's the team that won the state. But Dan's team really put Batavia on the map. And then our group came 10 years later and also got beat in the sectional finals. And then Batavia's been very blessed for a town its size and In the very early 60s, there was Tom Harris, played at Iowa. Jim Howard played at New Mexico. Of course, Dan and one of his teammates played Division I basketball. And I played with two guys that had great college careers. And then I had the good fortune of coaching a guy who broke Dan's scoring records, Corey Williams, who Kentucky really recruited. Herb Sendek to this day is a dear friend. But he became the wrong kind of Wildcat. He played at Arizona. And then one of his teammates, Lamar Justice, played at Notre Dame. But I always kid Dan. I mean, I'm not saying it because he's sitting there with you, but he is a larger-than-life personality here in Batavia. But I always kid him. I said, Dan, Kentucky's still the all-time winningest college program. You're the all-time lean scorer in the men's program there. But I said, if your little old Podunk High School in Batavia, he's only the third all-time lean scorer.
Well.
But he reminds me very quickly, Mike, that Issel and Nick Fruen played at Northwestern, played 4 years, and he only played two. And his coach, Don Banderson, God rest his soul, coached not only one guy who played at Kentucky. When he went to a different school, he coached, I don't know if you remember, Chuck Verderber.
Sure. I remember the name, yeah.
Yeah, Chuck played for Coach Van at Lincoln. So, you know, but Dan is a truly, not only is he a large and life human being, personality, but when he comes back to our golf outing, he's not Dan Issel, he's just Dan, class of 66. And, you know, it's pretty special because, you know, his name resonates with class and character.
That's awfully kind, Jim. I appreciate it. Now, how many years did you coach at Batavia?
28.
Wow. You won't see that happen very often.
No, we were very fortunate. Fortunately for me, unfortunately for Batavia, when I took the job, Batavia had won 8 games in 2 years combined. So no one else really wanted the job. And I was only 25 when I took the job. And, you know, we were very fortunate. We were at the right place, the right people at the right time. And, you know, Dan's nephew, Robbie, played for us. Kenny Anderson's nephew, Nick Rogers, played for us. So there, as Batavia has grown, it's a school right now about 2,000. There's still a hometown feel. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go to a visitation this weekend. We used to have a group of elderly ladies that used to ride the bus with us. And when I mean elderly, they were in their 80s. And they watched Dan play. They watched, you know, guys come up. And the last one passed away Saturday evening, Helen Owens, at 96. But she watched all the kids play, and they'd ride the bus with us. We, you know, when Dan was here, we played teams like York of Elmhurst, Champaign Central with Clyde Turner. When we were here, we played at Proviso East, Rock Island, Quincy. Those were all Simeon, Derek Rose's school, St. Joe, Isaiah Thomas's school. And one of the reasons we were able to schedule the teams that we were, when you call people, one of the first questions is, hey, did Dan Issel ever come back to Batavia? And, you know, I'm very serious. And we've retired two jerseys in the history of Batavia basketball. Dan is one of them, and then Corey Williams, who also works for ESPN out in Arizona. Those are the only two. And you know, Mike, you will remember this. I say this with no, with all sincerity. When you guys played Jacksonville, I believe it was in Dayton.
Columbus,
okay. Yeah. When you guys played Jacksonville, and Batavia at that time was this town of about 10,000, there was no one on the streets. It was a Saturday afternoon because everyone was watching that game. I mean, you know, it truly was a special event, and obviously it wasn't the outcome that you guys wanted, but it was truly an amazing thing for a town like Batavia to be a small part of that, and because of Dan. And, you know, and it's pretty special.
Well, Jim, before we let you go, I know you just left the dentist chair, so you probably are needing
in
a break.
Geneva, of all places.
Oh, wow. But
which is the big rival.
I've got to ask you a question. You were a young pup when Dan was playing, and his neighbor, Kenny Anderson. We had Kenny on about a month ago or so, and he was terrific. But was Kenny's job much like mine to pass to Dan? Was that pretty much what happened with that ball club?
Well, you know, Kenny, in high school, Mike, Kenny was a better basketball player and baseball player.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yes, and, you know, every time I talk about Dan's scoring, you know, being third on the list of Batavia, he always reminds me he averaged 18.5 rebounds a game as a senior. But to answer your question, Dan was definitely the focal point. And as Coach Van once said, And I think all Kentuckians can relate to this. Because I asked him when he came to the tape if he realized how many great players there were. He said, I wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed, but wise man once told him, you don't bring a donkey to the Derby. And so Dan shot early and often with great results, I might add.
Well, Jim, we appreciate you coming on. Mike really appreciates the Batavia gear, and now you're going to have to send him stuff all the time like you do me.
Well, that'll be our pleasure, Dan, and you guys take care, and thanks for having me on.
All right, Jim.
Thanks,
take
Jim.
Take care. Bye-bye.
How about that? You shot early and often.
18 rebounds a game. It sounds like the only time I got the basketball was when I went and got it myself.
Well, let me ask you this. This gets to something that kind of galls me, and we've got a few minutes here, about professional basketball in particular, but maybe even college. You got 18 rebounds a game. You know what that means? That you didn't have many shooters on your team outside of you, okay?
No, so, it means we played great defense, and there were a lot of
it?
There
oh,
were a lot
okay.
of rebounds to be
oh,
to be had.
Okay. That sounds
now.
Reasonable.
Remember, that's in a 32 minute game.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it reminds me of what they're doing with assists now in the NBA. I mean, they're handing them out like candy at Halloween. I mean, you know, you get an assist for anything. And now they're talking about breaking the legendary Oscar Robertson's record, okay? The Big O, Cincinnati.
Triple-doubles.
Triple-doubles. And they didn't give assists out then no. like they do now.
No, it had to be a direct pass to a basket.
So they didn't even triple doubles weren't even tracked yet throughout most of it.
Well, you're right, Kring. You're right. Some places they didn't even track assist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in college, maybe they did in the NBA, but it was much harder to get. And of course, the Big O was one of those guys when I was growing up in Dayton that we followed, and we just, you know, he was one of our heroes basketball wise, and I feel, you know, bad for him. Because it's not the same. And they're all running around, they all being the writers. And it's a big deal now with Westbrook. And he's a heck of a player, don't get me
no
wrong.
No question.
But, you know, he's handing out dimes like they're Halloween candy.
It's almost like hockey. I always enjoyed if a guy takes a shot and misses it, but a guy scores on the rebound, the guy that missed the shot gets an assist.
A hockey assist. That's right.
It's almost like that in the NBA anymore.
And some people want to put a new category in, the hockey assist. You know, like you said, I mean, you don't need to put that in. You're giving it out anyway. I mean, it just amazes me. And Westbrook's on a roll now with triple-doubles.
Yeah.
He is on a roll.
Yes.
And he's
and that team's on a roll scoring-wise. Beal's given the kid from Golden State, Curry, a real run for his money for the scoring championship.
Isn't it amazing? I saw Beal play at Florida numerous times when he was there, obviously, Kentucky playing Florida. And I liked him a lot. I thought he'd be a good pro. But, man, has his game expanded. And I'll have to ask you, because you were a GM and a coach in the NBA, and I know what – you know, what we did at Charlotte, we were an expansion team. We didn't spend as much time on purpose with developing guys because we were looking to the draft. And we were a team that was trying to build, and we had expansion players. But, you know, a guy like Dell Curry, he was about out of the league. Okay, and Dell comes to us, and all of a sudden he's got all kinds of shots, and we worked plays for him to catch, shoot, and he had Muggsy Bogues at the point, who really could distribute the ball, and all of a sudden his career takes a change. And he lasts, another 10 years or so
right.
in the league because he got his confidence by playing with a not very good team and was able to play to his strengths, and then he carried him forward. So what is it about the NBA in particular, players coming to the NBA and just blossoming, particularly at the offensive end, guys shooting the ball that you didn't think would shoot as well, guys rebounding. When you looked at a guy playing college, you go like, he can't rebound. That's one of the negatives, okay? He just isn't getting it done. Or guys, here's another area when I was scouting that it was hard for me to judge because of the way the college game is played. Guys with the ability to beat you off the bounce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's typically the point guard that gets the paint touches. But now when guys go to the NBA, you see them take people off the bounce, pull up shot.
Kawhi Leonard is a great example of that. He's one of the best. Put it on the floor. Stop. Pop. I think there's a couple of reasons, Mike. I think number one, obviously, people develop at different ages, and especially with younger players leaving college earlier and earlier. You know, there's a chance for them to mature physically. That helps the game. And then, you know, when you go to the NBA, that's all you have to do. You don't have to go to class. You don't have to do any other things. Basketball is what you do. And some people that have a good work ethic just put in the time and become better at shooting the basketball or at putting the ball on the floor or rebounding, whatever it is. Because now a player development is so big in the NBA, and teams anymore, they almost have an assistant coach for every player. I mean, if you know, you can only put three assistant coaches on the bench, but most of these teams, and it's harder now with them being all spread out because of the pandemic, but under normal circumstances, you look at an NBA bench, and there's like seven guys in suits and ties sitting behind the bench. And so there's a lot of time put in on development. And if the kid wants to take the time to really work on his game, there's the resources there to do it.
There's a funny story was told to me by, and I guess the names will remain anonymous, but a number one high draft pick went to a certain team in the NBA. And they had the protocol you were talking about. I mean, all the development, all the time programmed around just practice. And you were required to be there in the morning and to spend time afterwards, watch film, work individually. So this very high draft choice, he's there it's after training camp, but it's season had just started. So he's there. And trainers typically in college and in the pros are people you can vent to, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can
a confidant,
and you know it's not going back to the front office or the coaches, correct? So this very high draft choice was sitting in the training room on the training table with some ice in the middle of the day after practice, after the original hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it may have been, and he's talking to the trainer, and he says, you know, so-and-so, this is they're wearing me out. And the trainer goes, what do you mean? He goes, I got to be here in the morning. They feed me breakfast. I work out. Then I got a team practice. And then they feed me lunch. And then I do individual work. And sometimes I watch tape. I'm here till 4 o'clock. And he said, if I wanted this, I'd have gone back to college. You know, and the guy's making millions. I mean, but
he's still there at 4 o'clock.
He's still there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And he's a rookie. I understand that. But I always thought that was a great story. And people think that when players go to the pros that they just practice. And it used to be that way.
Yeah, it used to be that way. You'd show up in time to get your ankles taped and go out on a practice floor. And you know, you didn't lift weights. Now, these players would rather spend time in the weight room than on the practice floor because, you know, most of the strength and conditioning coaches are the same thing as what you described as trainers. They become confidants and, you know, it's always good to look in the mirror and see your muscles bulging. And so the strength and conditioning coach will either work before practice or after practice with these guys. And so it has become more of an all-day affair than it used to be. Like I said, you used to show up, get your ankles taped, practice, and go to the Bambi bar for lunch.
That sounds like more fun.
That was a rallying spot, yeah.
You know, I went by there. Have you ever been to the Bambi bar?
I have never been to the Bambi
bar. Oh, you're missing something.
It's still there, I think.
Sure, it's open. It's still there, sure.
Should we go after the show today?
We could get I've got a meeting at 12:30, but we should do that sometimes. They used to have. I haven't been in there in years. I met Jerry King. former U of L player, and Marv Selvey there many years ago, and we had a couple beers late in the day. And it's been 10 years ago.
They had great cheeseburgers. Yeah. No, we used to stop. We practice at Bellarmine. What road would that be on?
Bardstown
Road?
Yeah.
And so we would practice from 10 to noon, and then we stop on the way home and have lunch at the Bambi Bar. And I couldn't believe it was still there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've even, if you paid attention as your driver drove by, I know you were in the back of the sedan, you had a driver, that they built a outdoor patio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So for the good times.
Well, we'll have to do that. Let's go. Let's make a point to go to the Bambi Bar.
Well, when I was with the original Charlotte Hornets, we were expansion team, Rex Chapman, our first pick. So about 2 years into it, around that time, it became public that Michael Jordan lifted weights, okay, and very actively, even on game day, after practices, mm-hmm. whatever, he lifted weights. He had a routine, had a trainer. So all of a sudden, it started a ripple effect through the NBA. And I know with our team, we couldn't hardly get guys into the weight room. We had a great strength coach. But at that point in time, Muggsy Bogues became a guy who would lift. And Kenny Gaddison, you remember Kenny Gaddison
sure.
from Old Dominion?
Yep.
I think he's been an assistant coach or was for a while in the NBA. Those two guys led the charge in there. And then ultimately, all the guys were in there. But it really, I always thought that when it became public that Michael Jordan was lifting. Even on game days,
yep.
that it now became in vogue to lift in the NBA.
How much of a surprise was that back when that happened? Because you know, to me, it's become so commonplace you almost expect it. But how big of a shift really was it?
Huge. Oh, it was huge because you were when we were coming up, you didn't lift a weight for fear that you would become muscle bound and it would affect your shot. Now, late in my career, the last three or four years, we would lift weights for our legs. But I never lifted a weight for my upper body ever. To this day, I haven't lifted a weight, and you can tell that now. But then when it started, and I think I told you, Mike, I think I hired the first full-time strength and conditioning coach in the NBA. His name is Steve Hess, and Steve was with the Nuggets for years and years. Now he has his own training facility that he trains all kinds of athletes. We didn't have weight room. We had to go out and buy all this weight equipment when we hired Steve. But like Mike said, once it became known that some of these bigger named basketball players were doing that, then it you know, you could, guys would line up to try and get in the weight room, but it was a huge shift.
And I think a guy like Karl Malone may have been lifting, you know, he was huge, but he didn't have the Michael Jordan effect. Mm-hmm. When the word got out that Michael Jordan was lifting.
Well, no one had the Michael Jordan effect except for Michael Jordan.
Right, but I mean, Karl Malone was pretty daggone good player.
Yeah.
Okay, and he was chiseled, and I think he did do lifting. But it didn't resonate like Jordan. It didn't, and for a lot of reasons, it did not resonate like Jordan. Now, he used to come into Charlotte and kick our butt and all that kind of good stuff, and he went to North Carolina. But you saw that throughout the league. You talked about hiring the guy.
Yeah, and you're right about Carl. I remember they used to have a summer camp in Utah where 8 or 10 NBA teams would send teams there to play round-robin games, and you would bring in your rookies and your players, your roster players that didn't play that much during the regular. Yeah, summer league. And so we had Mike D'Antoni was our coach, and he got up early and went to some health club in Salt Lake City, and it was like 6:30 in the morning. And Karl Malone was in there lifting. And D'Antoni went back to the hotel, woke up every one of our players, and took them back to the health club and showed them Karl Malone lifting at 6:30 in the morning. He said, "You want to be an all-star? You want to be a Hall of Famer? That's what it takes right there."
Karl Malone was just a man-child. I mean, he was chiseled. And I'll never forget, and I know we've got to take a break, I'll never forget, we're in Salt Lake City playing the Jazz. Gene Littles is the head coach, and I'm 6'3". Gene's about 6'2", and slender. And we're playing, and Gene gets mad at Karl Malone because he is punking at some of our players. So he starts yapping at Karl. And he had known Karl. He'd been in the league a while.
Yeah.
He starts yapping at Karl. And all of a sudden, a foul shot in front of our bench. A foul's been called. They're getting ready to shoot. And Karl kind of walks over to Gene and tells him to sit down and shut up or else. And I'm thinking, my God, Gene, you're in trouble
here. You're going to get killed.
And you're going to hope I jump between you and him? Yeah, no, that ain't going to happen. No.
They probably had, during that era, they probably had the best team in the NBA that didn't win a championship. John Stockton and Hornacek. Jeff Hornacek and Karl Malone, and they had some other people that could play. But they had a really good team.
Let's take a break, Crane. We'll be back. And there's a Utah team that was really good that we know of back in the day. We might want to discuss that. They had some players, too. They were called the Utah Stars. This is Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Keep it locked with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
Little Eagles, Dan, and we've all had those crazy nights on and off the floor, right?
Yeah, but I don't think ours was as crazy as Crean's was over the weekend.
No.
Sounds like he had a good time in Bloomington.
Drank that draft beer, ate that pepperoni pizza. Oh,
you know it.
What kind of pizza did you have, Chris?
We got actually just got like a meat lover's pizza. So it had like pepperoni, sausage, bacon, ham. It was.
I can do without the bacon.
Now,
I call the bacon pig.
Now let's get back to this date thing. If we get you a date, we'll set it up on a dinner. I'll get a. Let me work on this, but if we get you a date, would you go on a blind date just for dinner? We'll get you. I'll spring for it.
That's good.
We'll get a decent restaurant in town. I've got one in mind. I'll make a few calls. But if we get you a blind date to go to dinner at a nice restaurant, would you do that?
Absolutely.
Now, how old are you?
23.
23, and how tall are you?
6'2"-ish.
Okay, 6'2"-ish, so that means 6'1". And how much do you weigh?
Too much.
Now, don't say that. We won't get anybody to bite on this blind date idea. We're going to get this done. I'll work on it this afternoon, and then we'll come up with a way for someone to win a blind dinner date
with the Crean man.
Well, and you're up for it, all right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, all right. We got to figure out how to do that short of chloroforming somebody. I don't know how we'll be able to come up with somebody, but we'll get it done.
You know, Dan just broke my heart, Crean. I heard him say he was going to make the arrangements and pay for it. I was willing to be your date, man.
No. This has to be legit. What we're looking for here is a romantic evening with someone who
talks sports.
Well, I don't know. Can you talk about anything besides sports?
I can try. No, I can.
Okay. All right. He's 6'1". He's 6'1", he's way overweight, and he can't talk about anything but sports. Now, how are we going to get him a date?
Well, you know, but some of his friends who were at the gathering, graduation, there might have been a female in there.
There were.
Yeah, okay. You go. There
all right.
You go.
Well, but we're not looking for a one-shot deal. We're looking for something that could. Now, you know, there it's always hit or miss, but we're looking for something that could grow into a relationship.
There you go, Crean.
I'm down.
The table is set.
All right. We'll come up with it. I'll work on it this afternoon.
Let's talk as we get into Kentucky basketball and all the different ways that it may go over the next 2 weeks with people from the famous portal. Hiring of the new coaches, Orlando Antigua and Chin Coleman, mm-hmm. who's an Illinois guy. Mm-hmm. And O is a New York guy who coached here. And, you know, he played with the Globetrotters.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, played with the Globetrotters. Sure did.
Oh.
Yeah, sure
did. Well, you know what? We should ask Coach Roberts about Chin because he knows,
sure.
Everybody in Illinois basketball. We should have missed our chance there.
Well, we'll have a chance. We're going to have O and Chin on different times in a couple weeks, so we'll be able to ask them a lot of questions. But Green, we've got some cuts from their Zoom interview of, I guess, last week?
I think it was over the weekend.
Over the weekend. So now they ask whoever was the moderator, ask Antigua, Orlando Antigua, how he has become a better coach in his time away from Cal. Cal is his mentor. Mm-hmm. So you ask the question, you're away from your mentor, how did you develop your coaching style?
I've got a better appreciation now, having had the opportunity to sit in that seat, to know, not quite know, but a better idea of what is coming at Cal and what he has to do. And our jobs as assistants is to try to take things off of his plate. We need to figure out tomorrow's news yesterday. So, you know, staying on the grind, staying connected with the kids, staying connected with just people in the basketball world and in our relationships and doing those kind of things so that we can better serve him and have, make sure that he's prepared for everything.
The analogy I have is when you move over that seat from the assistant
18,
to the head coach.
18 inches.
Yeah, and he did that. Orlando
it's a long,
moved.
Long way.
It's with a lot of bumps in a row, too. went to South Florida. It didn't quite work out there. Then he resurfaces at Illinois. But I think the takeaway from that, and give me your opinion, is that the assistant coach has to be the head coach's alter ego, but has to walk a fine line between being a yes guy and throwing out thoughts.
Yeah.
And being able, I remember my first year with Lee Rose as an assistant. He said, now look, I want you guys, Everett Bass and I, you remember Everett.
Sure.
And I want you guys to give me all your inputs you want to give, and we'll organize practice together. But you have to be able to accept the fact that I'm not always going to take them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard,
right?
Which is you've never been an assistant; you've been a head coach. But as an assistant, you watch the same tapes, you look at things, and you see things differently, hopefully, than the head coach. And then you have to be able to accept the fact that the head coach doesn't see it that way, and not be offended. And that's hard. Look, I thought it was hard. I had to go through it. You know, I played professional basketball, and I thought I knew it all at that point in time. We all do, and I got over it, but he was so right when he told me that before we had ever had a practice or a game.
All right. Well, and, you know, he's responsible, so he has that right. He's the head coach. He has that right to take your advice or not take it. But you hit on something that I think is really important, and that is you can't be just a yes guy. To you know, every once in a while you have to stand up and say, hey, that's not right. You're doing it wrong. I remember one time we played we had a four game road trip. We and now they spread it out more. But when you went on the road, you would usually play four games in 5 days. You'd play back-to-back, have a day off, play back-to-back. And we were on one of those trips, and our fourth game was in Boston. And we're playing against the Celtics, and Pitino's coaching the Celtics. And we had the Celtics beat. We should have won the game. And we made...
Was this the first one or the second one? Or did you play them back-to-back?
No.
Oh, okay. Celtics were four.
Yeah, they were the fourth game. Okay. It was probably Washington, New York, and Philadelphia. But the Celtics were the fourth game in 5 days. We had them beat. Should have won the game. We made some stupid mistakes down the stretch. And we lost. We got beat. And I go into the locker room, and there's a six-pack of Gatorade bottles in the middle of the floor, and I think they're empty, and I kick it, and I had this pain shoot through my foot up my leg, and I knew I'd broken a bone, and I said some things that I shouldn't have said, but anyway, so now we're flying home. We're on a charter. We're flying home. And we have such a headwind that we have to land in Minneapolis to refuel. And it's snowing and blowing. And we get back to Denver in the middle of the night in a blizzard. And I can't even put my shoe on because my foot is so swollen. Ooh. And I call practice for the next morning. Well, it was just to get even. It was just to show I'm the boss and I can do this. And we're going to have practice after a four-game road trip. We're going to come home in the middle of the night, and we're going to practice the next morning. And the players didn't show up. They revolted. Thanks to my buddy Nick Van Exel, who was the guy who organized it all. And you know what? They were right. They should have not shown up. But... this is a long way to say my assistant coaches should have come up to me and said, Dan, you're just doing this for revenge. Don't have practice as a punishment. Give them the day off and we'll come back and start all over again the next day. But not one of them said that. And so we're sitting on the practice court and it's getting close to practice and I don't see any players. So I say to Mike Evans, one of my assistants, I said, Mike, are the players still down in the locker room? He said, no, they're not coming. And the next day at practice, we had every radio announcer, every newspaper writer, every television camera from in 90 miles of Denver was at that practice the next morning. So I paid dearly for that. I broke my foot and had to go through all that scrutiny just because my assistant coaches didn't say, nah, we shouldn't practice.
Did the players talk to the media or you?
Not that day.
Okay.
Because nobody knew it. We just went home.
Okay.
But then it came, the beat writers that were there found out that we had, they knew we were practicing and they knew the players didn't show up and they contacted a few of them. So the next day at practice the next day, every sports journalist in west of the Mississippi was at practice.
Yeah. Well, that's the background, the knowledge, the background, not only as a head coach, but the background with Calipari, I think. And I personally got to know him when he was here. He's just he's never met a stranger, really good guy. So I think that's a excellent. And I don't know Chin Coleman, but I'm sure that if he and O came together, that he's O signing off on him. So let's catch another one, Kareen. What do you think, Dan?
Talking about that, it wasn't a package deal, Coleman said he came because he thought he fit in this system.
I don't think it was considered a package deal. I think that it just so happened that our profiles and what Coach Cal wanted at the time just so happened to be on the same staff. I don't think that it was a package deal. I think that Coach Antigua handled his situation and his decision that he made in his lane, and I handled my situation and my decision in my own lane. We kind of run our own race in terms of making executive decisions, although it didn't hurt the fact that he and I have an unbelievable chemistry. Our connection is unbelievable. We're really, really, really tight, and we're brothers, you know, and we're able to work really well alongside of one another, and that just makes for a strong union. But I don't know about it being a package deal. I think that each individual ran their own race, and we just came to a decision that was best for both of us, and we wound up again at the same spot.
And that makes sense. You know, there were conversations had between O and Chin because O had been here before and he knew exactly what to expect. But you know, you have to make your own decisions in a situation like that. And the one thing that I haven't seen is how much UK had to pay the assistant coaches to take these positions. I'm almost certain it was well north of what they were making at Illinois.
Yeah, I know that.
Do you think?
I know that Illinois had counter offered Antigua over $1 million. So
now, can you verify that? Or is that just a couple gas bags and champagne or Urbana talking?
No, that's been widely reported.
Correctly, yeah. Huh? Okay. You know how they pay assistants now. They have a pool of money, whatever that school decides, $3 million, $4 million, I don't know. Maybe it's $1 million in a MAC school. Maybe it's $500,000. Whatever it is, they typically run it where they let the head coach decide who gets what from the top down, from the longest standing assistant to the newest assistant, however the head coach wants to do it. They go to that assistant coach's pool.
Well, but if – now, let's say Bruiser and Jay that are still there. I mean, they're not going to take less money to make room for these two guys. So, do you think? I mean, certainly the possibility exists that Cal has to go to Mitch or to somebody and say
cost of living expenses.
Exactly. Yeah. We need to bump this pool up a little bit. I can understand that he decides. Who makes what? But I would think that there's some flexibility as to the size of that pool,
which isn't unheard of, considering Mitch has kind of done that multiple times now, whether it be on the head coaching side with Cal or on the assistant coaching side first with Vince Marrow and the football side, and how much some of Stoops' assistants have been making.
And throughout the SEC or the Big Ten, you have coordinators in football at both sides of the ball, and you have assistants make a lot of money. And it's kind of staggering what they – I think there's a $2 million defensive coordinator, or maybe he's an offensive coordinator, in the SEC. And that's pretty hard. A bunch of million-dollar guys both sides of the ball. So who wants to be a head coach if you can make $1 million as an assistant?
Not have any of the pressure.
Yeah, and all the headaches, kind of go away. Yeah. But, I don't know. It's interesting. We got time for one more cut. Crean, the change, and this, I think this is important, Dan, in because of where Chin's from. He's got connections in Chicago, the greater Chicago area.
Right.
Okay. Yep. And O's been in Illinois, and he's been a lot of different places recruiting. Crean, let's talk a little change of the landscape in recruiting.
I was a part of a really, really good team, right? I didn't get anybody we were able to go and recruit and get. I just happened to be a spoke in that wheel, and it's that same kind of wheel that we have now is how we're going to approach our recruiting. Will we get some? I hope so. Will we miss on some? Probably. You know, the landscape has changed. You got all these new dynamics that are in play, but we're going to try to manage it as best we can. And like I said, when you have a Hall of Fame coach that you can go out and talk about, when you have a program with the history and the success that we have here at Kentucky, those are all great things to talk about to kids and families. And you talk about the educational part of it. I mean, there's so much that we can go out and talk about, not just the basketball. And by the way, the basketball part, that's pretty that's pretty good too.
Last comments on that, Dan Issel? All-time leading scorer at that pretty good basketball place?
Pretty good basketball place, yeah. I would think that with their reputation and who they can go, the living rooms that they can get in, representing the University of Kentucky ought to be a pretty easy job.
Well, tomorrow we've got a couple other clip screen. I want to go back to recruiting against the G League, I think is interesting, and using Mr. Issel, the transfer portal.
Oh, my goodness. Will you be excited about that? You think you can sleep tonight? Will you be okay?
A couple beers, I'll get to sleep.
All right. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll be here again tomorrow. By then, we ought to know if Baffert's horses are going to be able to run in the Preakness or not. Have a great day. This has been Sports Talk on ESPN Louisville with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel.
Bet Rivers Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.